Well, here we are once again. This is a third attempt tonight of trying to do a live broadcast. My name is Clyde J. Kell, and you're listening to Mystery Play Live, MPIR Live of Mystery Play Internet Radio. And we're going to be playing some outstanding old-time radio. I don't even know if I'm going out on the air. And if you're listening, please come into the chat room and let me know that you can hear me. We're going to start out with an episode from the series Escape. Escape was radio's leading anthology series of high adventure radio drama, which aired on the CBS network from 1947 to 1954. And we are starting out with an episode from titled The Diamond as Big as a Ritz. And I've started off kilter. I've got Hobo Chilling as thumbs up. So thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad that I'm going out. Thank you. And I hope you enjoy and you can hear the program. The Diamond as Big as a Ritz aired July 21st, 1947. So let's start it off and let me know if you hear it. Okay, please.
Escape. Escape tonight to a fabulous world where there is a diamond as big as the Ritz.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations presents Escape, a new series of programs of which this, the third, is The Diamond as Big as the Ritz by F. Scott Fitzgerald, produced and directed by William N. Robeson.
In a country as large as ours, there are many odd and wonderful corners hidden away, but none more fabulous and wonderful than the one conceived in the imagination of F. Scott Fitzgerald and located in the pages of his famous short story, The Diamond as Big as the Ritz. It is described in the words of John Unger, 20 years old, impressionable, and quite willing to swear to the truth of this whole strange affair.
I'd been going to the St. Midas Prep School for a couple of years, and this was my second summer vacation. I'd met this fellow Percy Washington during the winter and got to be pretty good friends with him. Only, I didn't know about his family or where he came from or anything like that. Of course, I knew he must be rich, because all the fellas at St. Midas come from wealthy families. So, when he invited me to spend the summer at his home out west someplace, that was okay by me. Well, we'd been on the train overnight when he first mentioned it. I don't even remember now what led up to it. We'd been talking about first one thing, then another. Exactly where is your home, Percy? I mean, you bought the train tickets and all.
It's so... in Montana, sort of.
Montana? Oh, yeah. It's pretty wild country, isn't it?
Some of it is.
Well, now, you take Hades, Missouri, where I come from. It's been settled for 150 years. One of the first towns on the Mississippi River.
Indeed.
Oh, sure.
That's very interesting.
Well, I sure do appreciate you not making jokes about it. You know, the way some of the fellas do when I say, I come from Hades. Why, my father's plantation stretches
from... do you know that my father is the richest man in the world?
Oh?
By far the richest.
Well, I read about a man that paid taxes on a $5 million income.
Small fry. If my father paid tax on his real income, it'd disrupt the whole economy of the United States.
No kidding. I like rich people. And the richer a fella is, the better I like him.
My father could buy out all the millionaires in the country and not even know he had done it.
Is that a fact? Well, I visited the Slitzer Murphys once. They're plenty rich. Why, their daughter Vivian's got rubies as big as hen's eggs. And sapphires that glow like headlamps.
I like jewels. Always have. I used to collect them instead of stamps.
And diamonds. The Slitzer Murphys had diamonds as big as walnuts.
Oh, that's nothing.
Huh?
Nothing at all. My father has a diamond as big as the Ritz. Please, I'm not joking.
But you mean as big as the Ritz-Carlton Hotel?
Exactly. My father has a diamond as big as the Ritz.
Well, from there on, it was something like a dream. We got off the train about dusk at a little whistle stop called Fish, Montana. There wasn't anything there, not even a station. So Just a broken-down old buggy and four or five sheep herders lounging beside the track and, I suppose, wondering who we were. Anyway, Percy and I climbed into the buggy, and without saying a word, the driver cracked his whip, and off we went. I don't know how far we traveled. We didn't seem to be following any road. After an hour or so, it got dark, but the driver kept right on, never saying a word.
I hope you'll pardon this inconvenience, John, but we have to take certain precautions, you know.
Oh, that's all right.
Anyway, we're almost there.
Your home, you mean?
Oh, no, to the place where we consider it safe to transfer.
Transfer? What do you mean?
There's the signal now.
Headlights.
Pull up the horse, Absom. Here we are.
An automobile? But how? Well, there's no road.
Oh, this car's specially built. Doesn't need roads.
Welcome home, master.
Good evening, Gigsome. Well, come on, John. Let's get in.
What? That door opened by itself.
Sonically controlled, you know.
Gosh. Hey, what's this car made out of? Silver?
No, platinum. And those are emeralds in the hubcaps.
And the upholstering. It's fur.
Mink.
You're ready, master.
Anytime, Gigsome. You've probably noticed the exceptional brightness of the headlights. The lenses are cut from diamonds.
Boy, what a car.
This old junk heap. We use it for a station wagon.
What are we stopping for? This is just a deserted canyon.
Oh, we're not there yet, John. It's a little further. Wait, you'll see.
Hello, pa! Go away!
Percy, what's that? That noise?
They're sending the hooks down.
Hooks?
Yes, to attach to the wheels. You know, that's what Gigsum is doing now.
But,
oh, yes, I forgot to mention. Gigsum will look after you during the visit.
Look after me?
Your personal valet. Of course, there'll be other slaves available, too, whenever you need them.
Do you have a lot of slaves?
Oh, 300 or 400, I suppose. Oh, all ready, Gigsome?
Yes, master. Hello! Haste away!
Hey, look. Look, we're leaving the ground.
Yes, there's a hoist up there on top of the cliff. Has cables about a quarter of a mile long.
But what for?
Oh, it's the only way in.
Imagine hoisting an automobile a quarter of a mile up the side of a cliff.
It's nothing, really. As you may have guessed, John, this is not going to be like anything you ever saw before in your life. Well, John, there it is.
That's your home? Oh, it's magnificent. Palatial.
It's not a bad little place.
How big is it?
I suppose you mean the number of rooms. I think it's around 140. But Father may remember exactly. Then, of course, there are other buildings. Slaves' quarters and things.
Why hasn't anybody ever found out about it? This place, I mean.
Well, for one thing, it's the only 5 square miles in the United States that have never been surveyed.
Huh? Why not?
Oh, things were arranged.
Well, I don't see how that's possible.
Believe me, it hasn't been easy. I understand Grandfather had to bribe 3 government bureaus, a vice president, and half of Congress once to keep this place off of the maps.
Oh, but surely somebody stumbled onto it. Prospectors, people like that?
Oh, yes, that happens occasionally. Then, of course, we have to arrange things.
You mean...
Not always. Usually we just take them prisoner and keep them. Same as the aviators.
Oh, planes come here?
Well, once in a while they fly over. Of course, they never get away. We have 9 anti-aircraft batteries around the hill here.
You shoot them down?
Oh, yes, great sport. It does upset Mother a bit, though. And there's always a chance that one might get away. That's Father's greatest worry.
Well, this place, this whole thing, it's fantastic.
Oh, come now, John. I picked you for a fellow with his feet on the ground. And you haven't seen anything yet, you know. This is only the beginning.
And it was only the beginning. We crossed the acres of lawn and entered the great chateau. And from that moment on, vision upon vision tumbled together in a gigantic kaleidoscope of color, symmetry, and exquisite harmony. But there were corridors lined with gleaming crystals lit by lamps cut from emerald. And there were great halls carpeted with chinchilla fur and ermine, and some with floors of clear transparency, flaming in the shifting glow of a myriad-colored fire beneath them. And there was a white-haired man, pink-faced and pleasant, who was Percy's father, and a lovely lady, with dark hair piled high on her head, like a fragile queen, who was Percy's mother. Soft music came from hidden places. Perfumes filled the air. Exotic foods and wines more rare than pearls. And finally, sitting in my chair in the great banquet hall, I quietly fell asleep. I thought there could be no more nor greater wonders. I was wrong. There were many more and greater ones. And one of them I discovered the next morning in the garden.
Hello there.
Oh, you're lovely.
My name is Kismine. You're John Unger and you're a friend of my brother. Are you from the East?
No. Well, at least not exactly. I'm from Hades.
Oh.
Missouri.
Would you like to sit down here on the grass?
Well, yeah, sure I would.
I'm going east to school this fall. Do you suppose I'll like it?
I think so. Of course, it'll be different from all this.
Well, that's what Jasmine says. And she's in the East now. I've never been outside.
Who's Jasmine?
My sister. She's older than I am.
I hope you won't be offended, but... Well, you're the most beautiful girl I've ever seen.
Yes, I know.
What?
I surprised you, didn't I? A year ago, I would have said thank you. But Father says it's very necessary to learn to take things for granted. So now I just take it for granted that I'm beautiful, you see?
You're pretty sophisticated, aren't you?
Oh, I'm not at all. I think sophisticated young people are terribly common. I'm not a bit like that.
No, I didn't really mean it. I only said it to tease you.
Well, I'm glad. I wouldn't want you to think anything like that. Why, I don't smoke or drink even. And I never read a thing except poetry.
I was only kidding.
Well, I believe girls should enjoy their youth in a wholesome sort of way.
Oh, so do I.
I like you, John. I wish you'd spend some of your time with me this summer. Not all with Percy.
Oh, I will kiss mine. I will.
You may be in love with me if you'd like to. I'm absolutely fresh ground, you know.
I am in love with you.
But of course we'll have to meet secretly. My parents wouldn't permit it if they knew.
Well, then that's what we'll do.
Well, I have to go now. I'm supposed to be with Mother at 11. Aren't you going to ask me for a kiss? Jasmine says boys always do nowadays.
Well, some of them do, but not me. We don't expect nice girls to do that sort of thing in Hades. It was a funny thing. Percy's family were polite, friendly, always smiling. And yet all the time I had a feeling that some terrible and golden mystery lay hidden just around the corner. A few days after I'd met Kismine, Percy remarked casually that an unusual event had occurred. A man had escaped from the cage. I didn't know what he meant then, but the next morning I was walking with Percy's father on the grounds of the estate.
The slaves' quarters are there, Mr. Unger.
Oh, yes, they're very nice.
Well, they're adequate. During one period of my youth, I became absurdly idealistic. It allowed them to live in luxury. I even equipped their rooms with tile baths.
I suppose they used the bathtubs to keep coal in. Mr. Schlitzer Murphy told me once...
I should imagine the opinions of Mr. Schlitzer Murphy are of little importance. They did not use the tubs for coal. They bathed in them. Unfortunately, several caught cold and died. So, of course, I had the baths removed. Shall we move on?
Mr. Washington, Percy said something about a man escaping from the cage. I didn't quite get it.
The cage, eh? Well, perhaps you'd like to see it. Might prove interesting, just as a novelty. It's over here.
These trees, they're 60 feet tall, and they have roses blooming all over them.
Rather interesting development by a Swiss botanist. They are the only ones in the world.
I'll be darned. Though I suppose you'll see them all over the country in a few years, huh?
No. No, these are the only ones. That was arranged. Well, here we are. The cage.
It's a pit dug in the ground. And a grating on top.
Oh, yes, it's not really a cage, except in a certain sense. Well, boys, how are you getting along?
Come on down here, sir. Throw him in, buddy, forehead.
How many men are down there?
About 50, as I recall.
Who are they?
Oh, aviators we've shot down, wandering prospectors, men of that sort.
Yes, but why are they kept there?
They've all had the common misfortune of having discovered El Dorado. Gentlemen, I'm sure you'd like to know that your companion who departed without my permission has been taken care of.
We know what you mean, you.
He was shot. He was shot by some of my agents in 14 different places.
Golf, Mr. Unger?
They found him then? The man who got away?
Those places were towns. My agents were over eager. None of them could offer a positive identification. I'm afraid the man may still be at large. So you see, it's not all utopia here. We do have our difficulties.
Isn't it a little unnecessary holding them like that?
Well, not at all. It's the only way to keep this place hidden.
Yes, I guess that must be important. Percy was telling me something on the train. I thought he was just kidding. But he said you had a diamond as big as the Ritz-Carlton Hotel.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. As a matter of fact, it's much bigger than the Ritz. Much bigger.
Well, summer went on, and I was more and more in love with Kismine. Oh, she was priceless, exquisite, like no other girl in the world. After a couple of weeks, I kissed her, of course, and I was really in love for the first time. Oh, I should have known. I should have put two and two together when Percy's father showed me the cage. But I didn't, until one morning late in the summer, I'd slipped off with Kismine to the rose garden. Kismine, I think we ought to elope.
Oh, I don't know. It would be much nicer to be married here. But then it would be more romantic to elope.
Yeah, all the Sunday supplements would write stories about fabulous heiress elopes with... You are fabulous, you know.
I knew an heiress from Omaha once. I don't think you'd like her. She visited my sister here.
Oh, you've had other guests then, huh?
Well, yes, we've had a few.
Wasn't your father ever afraid they might talk outside?
To some extent. Or let's talk about something pleasanter.
What's so unpleasant about it?
Well, I grew quite fond of some of them.
You mean they told and your father...
Oh, they didn't get a chance to. Father had to be sure.
Well, that's murder.
What else could we do? In the cage? Well, they'd have been a constant reproach to us. And Father does it so nicely. They're always drugged in their sleep, and then we tell their families they died of scarlet fever in Butte. I'm not sure how that affects the statistics there.
Of all the horrible...
Oh, it is not. After all, it'd be terribly boring here without ever having anybody. Why, Father and Mother have sacrificed some of their best friends.
You're no better than the... And to do with me?
Oh, couldn't you forget it? And be nice to me until you're put away? It's only for 2 or 3 weeks.
You'd go on this way, kissing, talking about love, when you know I'm not much better than a corpse?
You're not a corpse. You're not. I won't have you saying I kissed a corpse.
Oh, that wasn't what I said.
You did, too?
I did not.
You said
just
that...
Just a moment.
What?
Who kissed a corpse?
Well, nobody. We were joking.
You two haven't any business here anyway. Kiss mine. Go read. Go play golf. Don't let me find you here when I come back.
Yes, Father.
Good day, children.
You see? Now he knows. You've spoiled everything. You don't really love me.
Kiss mine, you... Look, tell me, what's the reason for all this secrecy? What if you are rich and have this place? Why would it be so terrible if anybody found out about it?
Why, it's on account of the diamond, of course.
Diamond? What is this diamond all of you talk about?
Well, it's the... Oh, you'd better ask Percy. I'm always getting things mixed up.
Well, I will ask him. And another thing, I'm getting out of here tonight. If I have to dig through the mountains, I'm going back east.
Take me with you.
No.
Why not?
His mind, dear, your father wouldn't permit it.
If you won't take me, I'll go tell him I want to marry you.
No, you can't do that. He'd bump me off this afternoon.
Oh, please take me, darling. We'll be terribly poor and very happy. And I'll cook things for you. Oh, herbs and berries and things. Won't that be fun? You will, won't you, John?
Well, my head was really in a whirl. This whole thing was fantastic. So was the family, even Kismine. I couldn't think of anything to do, but... well, I rushed to see Percy.
But, John, why didn't you ask me before?
Because I thought you were kidding all the time.
I know you wouldn't have believed me if I told you.
Yeah, well, I'm ready to believe anything now.
Well, it was Grandfather who started the whole thing. Purely by accident. He came out here from Virginia after the war between the states and stumbled onto it.
Onto what?
The diamond. That's what made this all possible, of course. Grandfather spent 2 years going around to different cities of the world selling bits of it. Then he started building this place. He put his money in jewels. But Father found that radium took much less space.
Yeah, but why the secrecy?
Oh, it just wouldn't do if anyone found out. Ruin the economy of the world. The thing's too big.
This has been going on for 3 generations, then. The cage and this thing of inviting friends.
Oh, yes. You see, there wasn't really any danger before airplanes. They are what worry us.
You knew when you invited me here what would happen.
Please, John. I thought you'd be more sensible about it. After all, you can see my position.
Oh, yeah. Well, where is it? Where do you keep this diamond that's caused so cockeyed much trouble?
Oh, I thought you'd guessed. You've noticed the hill the chateau stands on.
Yes.
It contains a cubic mile. And, except for a thin covering of dirt, it's one big, solid diamond.
Nearly midnight. I don't know what woke me, but all of a sudden I was staring across the patches of moonlight, spotting the ermine carpet of my bedroom. Staring at 3 slaves I'd never seen before. They just slipped inside the door and stood there, each with a vicious length of shiny copper wire. The official executioners. I lay there on the bed watching them, counting heartbeats. Not daring to move, not daring not to move. They didn't know I'd wakened, and they began edging across the room.
Come on, all 3 of you. There's no time now for this. All hell's broken loose. Hurry!
I took one long, deep breath, the first one in several moments, and then I was out of the bed in an instant, throwing on my clothes and dashing through the long crystal corridor to Kismine's room. Kismine, are you awake?
So they woke you up, too.
If you mean 3 of your father's slaves.
Oh, no, airplanes.
Airplanes? So that's what it is.
At least a dozen. I saw them crossing against the moon. Oh, look, they're circling way over there.
You think they're here on purpose?
Oh, yes. They dropped warnings to Father. It's that man who got away from the cage, you know.
Oh, good for him.
Yes, wasn't he clever? Well, I think we'll open up on them any second now.
Open up?
Yes, our anti-aircraft. Oh, this is going to be thrilling.
Thrilling?
Oh, look, they're in range now. Bravo! Bravo!
Kismine, get away from that window!
Oh, good heavens, did you see that?
Yes, and we've got to get out of here. Can't you understand? They'll bomb the chateau next.
I know. There's a little grove across on the side of the mountains. We always keep one of the cars there. Oh, we have a nice view of everything.
A nice view? Kismine, you don't seem to understand. They mean business. They're out to finish off you and your whole family.
Oh, but it all seems so silly. Or when you come right down to it, they've never even met us. What time is it, John? Is it morning yet?
I don't know. I've lost my watch. Seems to be getting lighter, all right.
It's quieter, too.
Well, they've knocked out your father's guns. Every last one of them. Won't be long now.
Oh, it seems such a shame. The family put so much work on the place. Everything's always been so pleasant.
Yeah. Well, you better get some sleep, Kismine. I'm going to walk down the path a little ways.
Oh, you'll come back.
Yes, Kismine. I'll come back.
At the edge of the wood, I stopped and looked out across the valley toward the wrecked chateau standing on its diamond hill in the center. The bombing had stopped. The planes droned over the far rim of the plateau, seeking some sort of formation. Then, on a little knoll just below me, three men appeared suddenly from the underbrush. The first one strode imperiously ahead. The other two bore a heavy burden between them. It was Mr. Washington and two of the slaves. I stepped behind a rock and stood motionless, watching them.
All right. This is far enough. We'll stop here. Now, hoist it up. Hold it there. Both together. Easy now. There.
The burden they held up to the heavens was an immense diamond, cut and polished, catching the first faint rays of the dawn and gleaming like a fragment of the morning star.
Now, you out there! You there!
I could see no one else anywhere in view.
You above there! I want you to understand, this is only a sample. I'll give you 1,000, cut as fine, set in pedestals of platinum. And I'll build you a temple 1,000 feet high, cast of solid gold. And on the top of it, I'll put 1 diamond 100 feet across, set there forever to catch the rays of your sun.
A thought began to dawn on me. I couldn't believe it.
I'll letter your name on the temple in emeralds. And I'll see that the whole world worships at its base. All you have to do is make everything the way it was before.
Mr. Washington was offering a bribe to God. He stopped talking and the three of them stood there looking up at the heavens, waiting for an answer. And then at the far end of the valley, out of those same silent heavens, blossomed the white puffs of parachutes. The man who tried to bribe God looked up and saw them, became old in an instant, and turning with lowered head, walked down the path toward the chateau. With sudden premonition, I whirled and headed for the spot where I'd left Kismine. Kismine in the car that needed no roads.
Haven't we gone far enough, John?
I suppose. We're 10 miles from the chateau.
Oh, it's all so hectic. This rushing about and losing sleep and everything.
Hand me those field glasses.
Here they are. Well, can you see anything?
No. Wait.
What is it?
It's your father and mother. And Percy. Yes, and the two slaves still carrying that big diamond. Oh, wait. They're going in a tunnel down below the chateau. So that's it. They've got an underground escape.
No, I remember now. The mountain's wired. Some kind of atom bomb.
Atomic bomb.
Oh, that's it. Father's had it for years. He always said it would disintegrate the whole works, diamond and all. Of course, he only regarded it as a last resort.
So he'd rather have it like that. Well, they're all inside the tunnel now. The troopers are moving in.
I don't suppose there's really anything to be done about it now.
And there wasn't.
I keep thinking about things the way they were. It was all so pleasant. Oh, I don't suppose it will be ever exactly like that again.
Not ever, Kismine. And maybe it never was. Youth's a time for dreaming. And dreams die, too.
I'll probably have to take in washing. But of course we'll be very happy. What will we do, John?
Do? Oh, we can love a while underneath the stars. That's a form of divine drunkenness we can all try. And then there may be other diamonds in the world. Who knows? And even though it's a shabby gift, there's always disillusion. Turn up your collar, Kismine, before you catch pneumonia. Sleep.
The Diamond as Big as the Ritz by F. Scott Fitzgerald was adapted for radio by Les Crutch.
Okay, that was A Diamond as Big as a Ritz. And how'd you like the way it ended? Big boom. exploding. And yeah, that Kismine, that girl, she's a bit of an airhead. Such a cavalier attitude about putting people to death that find out about the facility. Listen, I got the call in open. If you want to call in and talk about this episode, or maybe talk about some other old time radio, or maybe your favorite genre you'd like to listen to on future broadcasts, please do so. We'll wait a couple minutes before we start up the second episode for tonight's MPIR live broadcast. And if you're just tuning in, my name is Clyde J. Kell. I hope I get a good recording of this. In two previous attempts, Podbean gave me an error message that they were unable to keep the recording. And if the recording is successful of tonight's show, I'll be sure to put it up in my old time radio feed, so other folks can listen and maybe tune in to future episodes. All right. Are you going to call in Hobo Chilling? I see you gave me a thumbs up in the chat room. Oh, you've got to go now. All right. Well, listen, you be sure to tune in and keep an eye on. I think if you're marked as a follower, you're getting notifications, and I plan to do this. Now that I know that it actually works, I plan on to broadcast future MPIR shows, maybe this Wednesday and maybe Saturday. We'll have to see how it goes. But thank you for joining me tonight. Okay, folks, let's get started with the second episode from the series Suspense. Now, Suspense was one of the premier drama programs that focused on suspense thriller type stories. They aired from 1940 to 1962. And tonight, we are going to listen to Dead Earnest. It first aired August the 8th, 1946. So now, on MPIR Live, Suspense, Dead Earnest.
Now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Roma Wines presents Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you an all-star cast of Hollywood radio players headed by Wally Mayer in Dead Earnest, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spears. Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you a remarkable tale of
suspense.
Accident report submitted to Police Inspector Brandon from Lieutenant Steve Healy. Place 15th Street and 4th Avenue. Time 2:45 p.m. March 11th. Remarks. Ernest Bowers, age 34, was crossing the intersection as a signal light changed from green to red. A car driven by Theodore Toby made legal right turn from 15th Street into 4th Avenue.
Hey, look out!
The left of the car!
Give some air. Come on now, let me through here. All right, stand back. Let me have a look here.
Is he hurt, Pat, officer? I didn't see him. Honest, I didn't. I had the right of way.
He's passed out. Hey, one of you people call for an ambulance.
I'll go.
Oh, yeah, you. Go on. Okay, move back.
He's bleeding. Here, I'll prop up his head.
Yeah, use his jacket. Here, I'll hold him. Thank golly, he's limp. Feels just like he's dead.
Yes. Ernest Bowers felt like he was dead. Ernest Bowers suffered from catalepsy, a strange disease. He carried at all times a note in his inside jacket pocket stating that he was a cataleptic, and that in the event of seeming death, his wife should be immediately notified, or his doctor in the event his wife is unavailable. The letter also requested that no autopsy or embalming should be performed on his body for 72 hours, although in his particular case, the duration of the attacks were usually 4 hours or less. Ernest Bowers also wore a sterling silver bracelet with an inscription reading, "Do not embalm me. I am not dead." Catalepsy is a disease of the nerves and mind. The physical condition of the cataleptic when he's under a spell closely resembles death in all aspects, including the primary stages of rigor mortis. Officer Abbott was on the scene of the accident. He administered first aid to the injured man before making out his report.
Well, that ought to stop the bleeding. Looks like just a cut on his forehead when he hit the ground. Nothing much.
He can't be hurt bad, officer. I didn't hit him hard.
Yeah, that's right. It looked like just a little bump.
All right, clear back. Let's have a little air in here. I'll have to take down some information. All right, what's your name?
Theodore Tovey. Hey, here's my license.
Hey, you kids! Hey, what'd those kids do?
They picked up something off the street. I saw them.
There's the ambulance.
Oh, here it comes. Gee, I hope he's all right. It doesn't look like he's breathing.
My gosh, he ain't.
I told you to get back. Come on now, he's back, all of you. I'm glad you got here, Doctor. He's out cold.
No, officer. Now, let's have a look here. Yeah, I'll see he is.
All right, let's get him away.
He's dead.
Well, anyway, it didn't happen in the ambulance.
Okay, we'll take him away. Keep them back, officer, will you?
All right, come on.
Keep back, clear out. All right, the show's over. That's the second one today.
Yep, well, let's go.
Hey, whose coat was that he was laying on?
I don't know. Did you pick it up?
No.
Hey, officer.
Yeah?
Where's the coat?
Huh? Oh, my gosh, it's gone.
Okay, never mind. Let's go, Payne.
Ernest Bowers had lost the identification of his condition. The letter was in the inside pocket of his jacket. The silver chain he wore on his left wrist had snapped and fallen to the pavement. Two youngsters picked up the chain. Robert Minnelli, age 9 1/2, and Tommy Stoner, 8.
Hey, that cop yelled at us. Did you hear him?
Yeah. Maybe we should give it back.
No, what for? So he can keep it?
Look around the back of your father's shop, Bob.
Sure is a nice chain. Hey, there's writing on it.
Maybe it's the guy's name. Was he hurt bad?
Nah, just a little bump.
So what's it say?
Just a second. We'll be out of the alley. Yeah, Pop's gone home to eat.
Well, let me see it.
Wait a second, will you? It says, "Do not involve, do not something me. I am not dead." It's screwy.
What do we do with it?
Sell it, dopey.
But that's stealing, Bob.
It ain't stealing. We found it, didn't we?
But when we try to sell it, they'll ask us where we got it. What do we tell them?
Nothing. Use your head. You know what we'll do?
What?
We'll use Pop's welding torch. We'll melt it down.
He told us not to use it.
Pop ain't here, is he?
No.
Well, come on.
There it is.
Yeah. Here, put it on that brick.
Okay?
Yeah.
Be careful. You don't know too much about this, you know.
What are you kids doing?
Pop.
Nothing, Mr. Minnelli. We ain't doing nothing.
Nothing, eh? I thought I told you kids not to go near that torch.
We want to melt this down.
Give me that. Now, what's this all about?
We found this chain, Papa, and we want to melt it down and sell it.
Who's is it?
Well, we don't know, do we, Tommy?
No, we don't.
Well, you get it.
We found it.
Come on, let me have it.
There's nothing wrong, Pop. We just found it, see? It's ours.
Let me see, say something here. Do not embalm me. I'm not dead. But what's that?
That's screwy.
Where you find it?
In the street. Honest, Papa. Ask Tommy.
All right. Go on, get out of here.
Melting it down, Pop. We can sell it and buy some baseball.
All right, Ma, keep back.
Look at Tommy, see you?
Yeah, starting to melt.
Uh-huh. See how he does it?
Keep away, I told you.
It's all melted.
They sold the melted chain to a dealer for $1.30. $1.30. But the coat was the principal thing. In the coat, in the inside pocket, was the letter. The information about Bauer's condition was in the letter. The instructions that could save his life. The coat was picked up from the street by Honest Jerry Murdoch. Now, there's a big sign near the corner of 15th Street. It says, "Honest Jerry Murdoch, Swap Shop."
He brought the coat into a store, rummaged around on his shelves until he found some cleaner, then started to clean the blood stain.
I'm looking for a sport jacket.
Just a minute. Now, what kind?
Conservative.
Will you come over here, please?
Yeah. Yeah, something on that order.
Pick out what you want. How much do you want to spend?
Oh, about $5.
These cost more.
How much?
From 8 to 12. Over here, we got some cheaper.
These don't look so hot for $8.
8 to 12. Over...
I'll take a look. These don't appeal to me.
What size do you wear?
40.
Here, we'll try this one on. Nice and conservative.
It's kind of tight around the shoulders. Yeah, it looks cheesy.
Huh?
Well, I guess you ain't got
one. Wait a minute. What's your hurry? I'm just putting a new one in stock. Over here with the counter.
Huh? Yeah, it looks all right. What size is it?
I don't know. Here, try it on.
Okay. Yeah, it feels all right.
Sure.
Kind of stiff in front here, though.
Well, it's almost new, ain't it? You'll break it in.
Feels like cardboard or something.
You want it? $5.
Okay.
There still might be a couple of stains on it I ain't had time to take out. Use some cleaner on it or bring it to the tailor's. It'll be better than new.
Yeah. Here's the $5.
Ernest Bowers was brought to the receiving room of the Better General Hospital. The time, 4:10. If Bowers was going to awaken, it would probably be before 6:45. Intern on duty, Dr. Weldon, made out his report. He wrote it down while standing near the telephone switchboard.
Listen, honey, get this guy's wife on the phone if he's got a wife. Here, just a moment. Here's his wallet.
Another dead one?
Yeah, dead as a mackerel. I'm going to stay that way, too.
His home phone is here. I'll give it a whirl.
Let's see. Superficial cut. Four.
Yes?
This is Better General Hospital. Is there anybody by the name of Bowers at home? That's Bowers. B-O-W.
Just a minute.
She's going to see. How did it happen?
An accident. Automobile hit him. Funny.
What's funny?
Superficial cut on forehead. Apparently heart failure. I'm going to request an autopsy. I'd like to find out whether the heart disease was chronic.
Hello.
Here she is again.
Nope, nobody home.
Is Mr. Bowers married?
His wife says he is.
Where can I reach her? There's been an accident.
I don't know. She's out.
Well, you tell her to call the Vedder General Hospital.
Yeah. What happened?
Mr. Bowers is dead.
Can't reach her, eh?
No.
Gee, I'd sure like to do that autopsy. Maybe later, after he's gone to the morgue. Get me the orderly room.
Okay, use that one over there, here.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello, Payne?
Yeah.
This is Dr. Weldon. There's a delivery for you to go to the morgue.
Now?
Yep.
Boy, I ain't had nothing to eat since...
Yeah, since lunch. Go on now. It's down in the receiving room. Receiving room B. Papers are down there, too.
Why can't I wait a few minutes?
It's got to go now. They'll want to start the embalming so they can go home.
How about sending one of the other boys?
I don't care, just as long as it gets there.
It was then 4:22 in the afternoon. Dr. Theodore J. Weldon left Honey at the switchboard and walked upstairs to the intern quarters and settled down to reading the sports page of the afternoon paper. At that moment, if anyone had been in receiving room B of Better General Hospital where the body of Ernest Bowers lay on the patient carrier, they would have seen a fly crawl slowly across the face of the dead man, and they would have seen his nose twitch.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you an all-star cast of Hollywood radio players headed by Wally Mayer in Dead Earnest, a radio play by Cedric Lester and Merwin Gerard. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Between the acts of Suspense, this is Ken Niles for Roma Wines. Yesterday, I read an article listing 20 ways to beat this dog day heat. Among them were taking noon naps, soaking wrists in ice water, and taking salt tablets. But none sounded half so pleasant as my favorite cooler offer, Roma Wine and Soda Ice. Yes, Roma Wine and Soda is one of Hollywood's favorite ways to keep cool. And no wonder, for Roma Wine and Soda is so light, so right, so easy to serve. And believe me, so cool to come home to. Just half-fill tall glasses with Roma, California Sauterne, or Burgundy, or any other Roma wine type of your choice. Then simply add ice and sparkling water. In seconds, you're enjoying America's smartest, coolest summer refresher. And remember, because Roma is selected for you from the world's greatest wine reserves, refreshers made with Roma are better tasting naturally. So, for cool contentment all summer long at low cost, serve and enjoy Roma Wine and Soda. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, largest selling wine in all history.
And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Wally Mayer, who, as Police Lieutenant Healy, heads an all-star cast of Hollywood radio players in Dead Earnest, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Henry Prince had purchased the coat in which was the letter that could save the life of Ernest Bowers. When Henry Prince, at the secondhand clothes store, he stopped to have a chat with some friends, made some purchases at the grocery store, and started home. The time, a few minutes after 5. He lived about 2 blocks from the scene of the accident. His wife was waiting for him.
Why, how do you like it for $5?
It looks all right. What's that?
Hmm?
A spot?
Where?
Take it off a second. Well, sure, yeah. I wonder what it is.
Oh, he said there were a couple of spots. Cleaner will take them out.
Yeah, looks like it might... What's this in the pocket?
I don't know.
Oh, honestly. To whom it may concern, please open and read.
Oh, that's what must have felt stiff.
Yeah. This note is carried on my person wherever I go. It is to advise responsible parties that I am a cataleptic. That if it appears as though I am dead, I am not. And that my body is not to be molested for a period of 72 hours... neither by autopsy nor by embalming, although the maximum periods of my attacks usually do not exceed 4 hours. Please telephone my wife, Mrs. Margaret Bowers, at Fulton 11231. This is a boarding house, address 841 and 1/2 West 25th Street.
Huh?
If she is not there, please try Exminster 43422. This is the number of Dr. Benton. It is of vital importance. It may mean my life. Thank you, Ernest Bowers.
Yeah, that's a funny one.
Where'd you get the coat, Henry?
An honest Jerry Murdoch's.
I wonder what we can do.
Well, nothing's probably forgotten already. Somebody sold the coat to him, forgot to take the letter off.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like something a guy'd forget.
Oh, the devil would.
Well, it might be important. Look at that, Henry. Those spots look like blood.
Nah, too dark.
That's the color blood turns. I'm going to telephone that number.
Go ahead. I think you're wasting your time.
Well...
why do you bother with things like this?
Hello?
I'd like to talk to Mrs. Bowers.
She ain't in.
Well, how do you know? You didn't even
she
go...
she went out, and you ain't the first after her.
Who else wanted to get in touch with her?
Oh, somebody. I don't know who.
Well, thank you.
Hey, see, you're wasting your time.
I'm going to try that Dr. Benton. Let's see. Mr. 4, 3... 2, 2.
Look, I'm hungry.
Oh, it's busy.
How about some dinner?
It's cooking. You know, I just can't get it out of my head. That guy, whoever he is, lying there and people thinking him dead when he ain't. Maybe doing things to him. What's embalming?
Well, they do that at the morgue. It's preparing his body for burial. I think they take all the blood out of his veins.
Well, that'd kill him if he wasn't already dead.
Well, it couldn't kill him no deader.
Henry, I'm going to find out about that coat. Where's this place you bought it?
Honest, Jerry. Now, wait a minute, Francis. I put in a good day's work. I'm tired.
Now, listen.
I don't want to run around the city looking for someone I don't even know about.
Well, I'll go myself.
Yeah, and how about me at home here while you go out? I want to eat. I'm hungry.
Well, dinner won't be ready for another 15 minutes anyway. Where is the place?
Oh, all right. I'll go with you.
Oh, well, why don't they answer? What?
Well, he ain't back yet.
Well, what's the sign say? 10 minutes?
Yeah, but those guys put up signs like that if they're going away for an hour.
Well, we'll just wait a few more minutes, Henry.
Oh, come on, Francis.
Hold the door. Hello, is Mrs. Bowers in?
No.
Mr. Bowers?
No, he's dead.
Oh. Oh, he is?
Yeah, that's what they tell me.
Well, look, would
you're
you mind...
bothering me, lady. I got a meal set up on the table. I can't be answering a million questions.
Yeah, but look, all I want to know is when Mr. Bowers died.
How do I know? Ask Mrs. Bowers. She'll be home soon.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
Well?
Well, Mr. Bowers is dead. Found that out.
Well, you see, I told you.
Well, what about the letter, then? What if he ain't dead? What if they only think he's
dead? Well,
what
do you want to do, wait here all night?
No, I'm going to go down to that place where you bought the coat.
You going traipse around the whole city?
Well, if I have to.
Well, without me, then.
Well, do as you please.
I'll be home. I'm hungry.
Oh,
if you think
Henry.
More of a crazy letter than you do with feeding your own husband, then that's all.
What do you mean, that's all?
Just what I said, that's all. Well,
the trouble with you is you just don't have no imagination.
No, I just don't have no imagination. I'm just a home-loving guy. That's all. I don't go sticking my nose where it don't belong.
Well, go on home, then. I'll find out about it. Oh, busy, busy, busy. How can a doctor's line be always busy? Hey, pardon me.
Sure, sure. What do you have?
I just want to find out about the man next door. Do you know when he'll come back?
Oh, Honest Jerry? No. Any there?
No, there's a sign in his door. It says he'll be back in 10 minutes. I've been waiting for him more than a half hour.
Well, maybe he went home.
Oh, yeah. Do you know where he lives?
Search me, lady.
He will come back.
He's usually there when we close up here. That's about 7 o'clock.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Oh, officer.
Yes, ma'am?
Officer, do you know where the fellow who owns that swap shop lives?
No, ma'am, I don't.
Oh, I just wanted to get in touch with him. There's a sign on his door.
Why don't you ask him, ma'am? There he is now, just going in.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. Mr. Murdoch. Mr. Murdoch.
Yeah?
Oh, gee, Mr. Murdoch, I'm glad you came back.
Oh, I was just having a bite to eat.
Yeah.
Come on in.
Thank you.
What can I do for you?
You sold my husband a sport jacket this afternoon.
Did I? What kind?
A light blue, and it had a few stains on it.
Oh, sorry. You can't take anything back once it's sold.
No, that isn't it. I don't want to give it back. Where'd you get it, Mr. Murdoch?
I don't even know which one you're talking about. You know, I sell a lot of...
It must have been it just a few hours ago. It was blue with thin red boxes.
Oh. What about it?
Where'd you get it?
What do you want to know for?
Well, because there was a letter in it, an important letter.
I don't know. How can I remember where I got it?
Long ago. Was it very long ago?
I don't see where it's any of your business. Where I got it?
Mr. Burns, it may be important. I've been trying to reach the numbers. The doctor's number's always busy, and his wife isn't home yet.
I don't know what you're talking about. Oh. Please, now, I'm busy. I got lots to do.
But you must tell me. Just look, just tell me one thing. Did you have the jacket in here a long time?
Well,
please, it's very important.
No, I just got in this afternoon.
Oh, you did? Where did you get it?
You said one question. You asked it, I answered. That's all.
There was blood on it.
That I can't help. Now, if you'll excuse me,
No, you got to tell me.
I don't have to tell nobody nothing.
Mr. Murdoch, look, I may be all wrong. I'm probably just crazy doing this, but if that man's alive and they do anything to him, I'll just never get over it. I'll never be able to live with myself.
What are you talking about?
Listen, there was a letter in the inside pocket of that jacket. You see, it said that Ernest Bowers was a cataleptic.
You mean he goes into fits?
No. A cataleptic is somebody who looks like he's dead at times, you see, and he isn't. He goes into a spell and it looks as though he's dead.
Yeah.
Sometimes they take dead bodies to the morgue. They embalm them. That means they take all the blood out of their veins. Now this fellow Bowers is a cataleptic. I don't know whether he's dead or alive, or even if he's worrying about this letter, but I got to find out.
Well, there was a...
What?
An accident before the...
Where? Who was in it?
I don't know. Believe me, lady, I didn't know anything all about this, all this. Wait a minute, you think this guy who was taken away in an ambulance was a catalepsy?
That coat, was it his?
Yeah, lady, but it was left there in the street. They drove away and left it.
Who?
The ambulance.
What ambulance?
Oh, now, I don't know. It was on the corner. The cop was there. He told somebody to call an ambulance. It come and took away the man.
Is that the cop out there now?
Yeah. Oh, but look, you got to protect me. I ain't done anything wrong. I don't anything like that. If it happened, I would never take it.
Officer. Listen, officer. Officer.
Ernest Bowers lay on a slab at the morgue. If he were alive, probabilities were that he would regain consciousness about 6:45. The two embalmers on duty at the time had decided to get a bite to eat when the phone rang.
But we're going out to eat. Yeah, I know another one just came in. We got it here. Well, what's the rush? No. We just want to grab a cup of coffee, and then we'll get right on it. Well, is it our fault if it comes in just when we want to have a... Huh? Or we can go home after? Oh, well, that puts a different complexion on... Okay. Yeah. Hey, what time is it, Tony?
6:30.
Doc says if we embalm this one now, we can go home.
Well, let's start in, then. I'm hungry.
Okay.
Let's start the motor. He's a young guy, ain't he?
Yeah. You know, I was speaking to the wife about that yesterday. Oh, get the injector out, Tony. She was saying more and more people die older and older.
Yeah, looks like we can open through the neck.
Yeah, give me a piece of that gauze. Yeah, I said to her she should be around this place a while. We get them all ages.
Hey, want me to do it?
No, that's all right. You get the injector ready.
Hey, look at him. You know, you'd never think that such a little thing like his heart stops beating could make him dead and not alive.
Yeah, hold it steady now, will you?
Yeah.
Ready?
Hey, just a second. Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
Oh, what's the matter?
My glasses. They're clouding up.
Well, take them off.
Oh, I'll just clean them.
What'd the wife say today?
What? Oh, about all ages?
Yeah.
Oh, she didn't have anything to say. Only that most of the guys we deal with probably come to a violent end.
Well, there's something in that.
Okay. You got my glasses cleaned. Let's...
What's the matter?
They're steamed up again. Now, every time I bend over near, I wonder.
What?
It must be my imagination.
What?
I could have sworn this guy was breathing on my glasses.
Oh, is he?
No, how could he?
Well, come on, then. Let's go. It's 6:45 already.
Yeah.
Hold it. I get the phone.
Now, let's get started first.
Okay.
I will just... Al.
What?
Hey, what's the matter with you?
I thought I saw the guy's hands twitch.
Oh, don't be silly.
Oh, boy. You gave me a scare. Hey, let's wait a second. I'll get the phone.
No, it'll probably be another job and we'll never get out of here. Now, let it ring.
It might be my wife.
Well, if people are going to hang up faster and you can pick up the phone. Well, all right. Come on. Now, let's get this thing over with.
All right.
Okay. Give me the knife again. All right. I'll make a nice, neat little incision. Hey, Tony.
Yeah?
Look, I'm bent over like this, see? I ain't gonna move. My glasses are full of steam again.
Oh, Lord!
Is he alive? Hey, oh, look at me. I'm shaking all over.
Look at him, Al. Look at his lips. Listen.
Okay, shut that thing off.
Apparently, the life of Ernest Bowers was worth $1.30 for a silver bracelet and $5 for a blood-stained jacket to honest Jerry Murdoch. Their petty thefts brought a man to the brink of death. As for the busy telephone in Dr. Benton's office, it wasn't busy at all. The good doctor had unwittingly replaced the receiver on the stand incorrectly. There's just one more episode which perhaps doesn't belong in an accident report, but which I would like to include. After regaining full consciousness, Ernest Bowers put in a telephone call from the morgue.
Hello?
Hello, Mrs. Brawley. Is Mrs. Bowers in?
I don't know. I didn't see her come in.
Josie, see if Mrs. Bowers is home.
Who is it?
This is Mr. Bowers.
Who? Mr. Bowers? They told me it was dead. The hospital called and said...
I know, Mrs. Brawley, but they made a mistake.
Oh, well, here she is. Hello? Ernest? Where are you?
Well, darling, it's quite a long story.
Well, never mind that. You just get right home, you hear? Dinner's getting ice cold.
Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines. R-O-M-A. Made in California.
Now, don't you just love that ending? The man almost died, and his wife is worried about him missing dinner. His dinner is getting cold. All right, I've got the call-in open now. If you want to call in, we can talk about some old-time radio, discuss, maybe you offer suggestions for your favorite episodes you would like to hear, and your ideal old-time radio program. That's what this is all about. We'll give it a couple more minutes here before I close things out. All right, you've been listening to MPIR Live, Mystery Play Internet Radio Live, and my name is Clyde J. Kale, and we had a rocky start. This was the third attempt tonight, and I'll find out if I get a recording so I can put it on the on my Podbean feed afterwards for those folks that weren't able to make it to the live show. Thanks to everyone for listening, and hopefully we'll do more of these. We'll see you the next time. Bye-bye.